Yeah, and in considering some of the different choices that there are out there for folks, I've heard that there's a big resurgence in baking and food handling and that kind of stuff during this shelter at home. I know we've done a couple of shows talking about proper food handling and things of that nature, but just as a refresher course, what are some of the primary do's and don'ts about baking or canning or doing any of that stuff at home in the kitchen?
Well, that's a big question. There's a lot to think about in this frame. I think what's, first most exciting is how much people are excited about making bread, for example, and, picking up a sourdough starter or trying to start bread from yeast for the first time. Again, those are living organisms and they take a little bit of proper care, but, there's lots of room for experimentation when it comes to bread and lots of wonderful recipes out there. And I know my daughter, for example, has been baking up a storm, and I'm really glad we got a 50-pound sack of flour before the flour became much less available in the grocery stores these days. The other part to that question is given the opportunity to talk with experts who work in this field, and we in the University of California Cooperative Extension Program have the Master Food Preservers, and this is right up their alley, and they are trying to help by moving some of their programming to online versions. We're getting some videos posted for making jam and other recipes, but we have a number of recipes posted on our website, which is Cooperative Extension Humboldt, if you search that. And we've got a place where people can send in their questions to and can get a certified Master Food Preserver to help answer those questions.
Now, my number one question here is, where are you storing a 50-pound bag of flour and not having it all over the house?
Right, and not in the garage, right? I have a pantry, so it's not ideal.
Okay.
I hope I don't get pantry pests, because that's another issue. But, yeah, it's in a bag, and then it's in a big plastic bag besides that. But, yeah,
that's what I was wondering. If you've broken it up into like maybe 5-gallon Ziplocs or something like that, that would keep the potential explosion factor limited.
Yeah, no, that's a great idea. Haven't gotten there yet. Yeah, I haven't had as much home and downtime as maybe the average person is. I think I'm working harder now and longer than I ever have, just trying to keep a team of folks and all of our volunteers, motivated and being able to help people in this space, because a lot of what we do is really about stuff in the home and the garden, and that's what people have time for right now. So it's a good time to be an extension and helping people through those kinds of questions they have.
Yeah, it's interesting. You're indicating that to keep the staff motivated, I would think that they would be flying from pillar to post, and it would be almost like an adrenaline high, because there's so many people asking so many questions, and kind of a validation that the service is one that people want.
Yeah, well, no, that's true. But just, it's not easy to move from, I think everyone's going through this, but in a place where you see new people every day, or you have a team and, you can get excited about something together, and instead everything is in this virtual place. So, yesterday I spent 8 hours on that online Zoom conference calling tool, which is enough to kill any person, not with one group, but with like 10 groups over the day. And my family looks at me at the end of the day and they're like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "No, no, I'm really not." Because you just can't stare at a blue screen for that long. I mean, it's kind of fun. I mean, I'm getting to see people, in their funny places wherever they are, and their cats will climb up on them, or their children will come running through the room in the backdrop, and that's I like the humanistic side of that, and it's not all professional work stuff, and so it makes it feel like we all are people and have families, and that's lovely. But trying to stay energized and manage your own personal capacities in this time period is different. And I think we're all handling it in different ways. I mean, but my organization is an organization of extroverts for the most part. And so we thrive off meeting new people and doing new things. And here we are in this isolated world. And so that takes some, extra caring and tending, if you will.
Yeah. I had a buddy of mine this morning. We've been having some of those Zoom conference things each morning. Yesterday, I was on two or three of them. He was on three of them. Said Zoom fatigue. I think there really is something to that.
Yeah. On the other hand, I mean, we had a number of workshops that were scheduled for in-person events, and, you know, the messages coming down were like, oh, well, you better cancel those because you've got too many people coming together. And my reaction was like, heck no, I'm going to figure out how to deliver these and deliver these differently. So this week started the beginning of like 3 weeks of intense workshop delivery through electronic media, which we know doesn't work for everyone. But I was able to take my speakers that had already been, you know, in the docket and help them learn how to record their presentations with their video on, help them edit it, and then post their videos up, and then create set time periods for live question and answer sessions with the speakers. And we got 500 people interested in one of our classes in that format, which, you know, we would have served 20 or 30 in person, but to move to that kind of crowd is astounding. So it's challenging to learn how to work in the space and load things to YouTube and make channels and video edit and all the things that I, you know, didn't know how to do before, but we're able to reach a much broader audience. So that's really exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting that you felt the need to edit. That's one of the things that I find most frustrating in doing any of these shows, like on a recorded basis. It's like, don't edit it. Let it be real. I mean, if I mess something up, then I mess something up. That's part of the beauty of what it is that we do, being not polished instead of being super polished. And it's but to have that ability is kind of cool too.
Yeah, it's more like you turn the camera on and there's a few minutes of you staring at the camera, pressing the buttons and trying to figure out if it's working. You don't need to see that. And then there's the end, right? But occasionally there'll be like a screaming kid that runs through the middle of your video and you either laugh it off or some of them want that taken out.
Yeah, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Jana Valakovic from Parts Unknown. Well, okay, you really don't need to disclose where you are, but let's just say she's in the Great White North somewhere, north of the Mendocino County line.
That's correct. That's maybe as
there
specific
we
as we're going to get in an undisclosed bunker.
So your daughter has learned or discovered baking, huh?
She is turning into a master, yes. We've got a good friend who's been being her master in guidance here. And once she completed 6 versions in one form, then she's moved on to the next. And, yeah. Keeping us all happy and healthy with lots of fresh, beautiful smelling bread.
Well, and that's what one of the challenges, I think, and you know, I've seen some things that talk about showing concern about, okay, the diets change. You know, as we have the emphasis on trying to help out our local restaurants stay open, and if you can, you know, eat out or order out as much as you can, and then doing the baking at home, is that there's a concern that we're all going to put on 10 to 15 pounds during this thing and then have to work it off.
I think that's true. But, I mean, the exciting part, and you can look at, like, milk and egg availability as illustrations of this, is that the family breakfast is being returned, right? I mean, in our fast, modern-paced life, a lot of folks don't take time for breakfast. And what we're seeing is that's changed, is now everyone's at home doing their work on Zoom and trying not to step on each other's toes. There's time for a good home, you know, put together homemade breakfast. And that's, I think, a really positive outcome of this It's, you know, making challenges in our supply chains, and, you know, eggs are going very quickly because people recognize that they do have a pretty good shelf life on them. And so if you're in the egg business, it's a good time to be in the egg business. But, you know, as our food distribution channels switch from an environment where they've been, you know, going to restaurants or going to institutions or going to schools, you know, how do you repackage, reaccommodate, and make everything seamless so that we can get the right amount of food to the right amount of people? I mean, we haven't changed our population size at all. It's just we're changing the flow of food and distribution and packaging and processing.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's where the hiccups are showing up. And I mean, like the toilet paper thing, I think is a real crack up right now. You know, it's not like we suddenly increased our demand for toilet paper. It's just that, you know, the population hasn't changed, but the amount of toilet paper that people are buying and the hoarding that's happening disrupted the flow of the toilet paper supply, which is a very tightly watched product because it's bulky and it's not a high margin product. So people don't have whole warehouses of toilet paper. They just have a supply chain that feeds it into the right places at the right time based on a fairly predictable set pattern of use. And then when the pattern of use changed, that's where the unavailability stacked up.
And so it's all just in time because we don't have those distribution warehouses to speak of anymore. So it's whether it's that or like
with cheap toilet paper, right? I mean, it's not something you want to invest in a whole warehouse in of a bunch of cheap toilet paper. But I mean, now you can sell it for a lot of money.
There's a buddy in the Midwest that's having a toilet paper promotion, and you drive by his radio station, and you get a free roll. If you're listening to him, you get a second roll for free. I'm sure he's going to have a lot of people doing it just because it's kind of goofy and kind of off the wall. But it kind of, for me at least, speaks back to the concept of being prepared, whether it's earthquakes like we're accustomed to or flooding like we're accustomed to, of having some of these foodstuffs available.
Yeah.
We've seen a run also on tuna. Yeah, it's like tuna fish. Okay, everybody goes, yeah, right, okay. Tuna fish, that's what you had in college. Thank you very much. Maybe you had it with Hamburger Helper, and that's about all she wrote. Can't find the stuff now. You know, I enjoy tuna fish because I cheat and put like pesto in it and peppers and things like that to make it a little bit more exciting. But, you know, it's like now everybody has either understood the power of tuna fish or they're just buying things and anything that's in a can that has a shelf life of more than 6 months, we're all into. Just interesting consumer buying habits during this kind of a period.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I hope things settle out. And it's, you know, it's hard for a number of our producers right now, especially those that are producing fluid milk, because where fluid milk was going, and I know you've talked to the Alexander family recently on this show, you know, illustrates how challenging it is when consumer demand changes in a way that you don't anticipate and can't plan for. So the packaging for milk, for example, like, you know, like we package milk for school distributions, of which people are still getting school lunches, but it's not at the same volume. And maybe the milk isn't provided, you know, you don't need that morning milk snack in that same way. And so suddenly you had milk that was going into little boxes in little containers, and that source is no longer, that's not needed anymore. So how do you retool that packaging so that fluid milk can go somewhere else? That's the kind of pickup disruption.
I got an idea.
Disruption.
You work with the cookie manufacturing industry. That's what I should have mentioned to Blake. Or your daughter, and forget the bread. Let's make cookies.
Yeah. Oh, trust me. She's got that one down, too.
Oh, good deal.
I had to put a kibosh on it.
Information time. It's 8:30.
Hi. Hi, I'm Vanessa with PG&E. If you see a down power line, stay away from it and keep others away. Call 911. Let our first responders come out and handle it. Police and fire will respond as well as PG&E. To learn more, visit pge.com/safety.
There are many ways to start a fire, but one sure way to put it out. Learn how you can do your part at smokeybear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Sponsored by the U.S.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Talk. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Jana Valakovic from the UC Cooperative Extension, Humboldt County. Did I get them all in there this time?
You did. Great.
All right. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, REDEC, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, and Murphy's Markets. Jana, the concept of do-it-yourself gardening, I know there's a lot of folks that are out there now trying to do, and whether we're buying packets of seeds or whether we're getting the starts from a favorite nursery or ordering them online to get it going. There's certain tricks of the trade, so to speak. One of the memories I have, or two memories that I have growing up, one was at the cabin in Trinity County, and cherry tomatoes off the vine warm. I don't like cherry tomatoes, but off the vine warm, it was like, okay, nothing better than that.
Yeah.
And having hanging strawberries here in Eureka at the house, and having them kind of cascade down. Both took a little bit of planning. Both were completely different types of products. What are some of the rules of the road as if you want to try an at-home garden?
Oh, gardening is really so easy. It's really about making sure you got the right soil. The soil's in good shape. It's got some nutrients, and it's getting watered regularly. And that you're either if you're growing in a pot or a container that it's big enough for the root ball for whatever you're growing, or in the ground that the soil's conditioned and ready to go. We put together a Saturday hour and 15-minute gardening series that started in mid-April, run into mid-May, and those are being recorded right now too. So if you've missed some of the early ones, you're welcome to check those out for the programs that have passed. But we've been talking, our program's talking about, you know, how to manage the soil, how to grow cool season vegetables, and getting ready later in the season for warm season vegetables, and then just sort of the general, you know, practices for caring for your garden over time. I mean, I think this excitement of, you know, something, can we have some pleasure in life, and the fun of watching, you know, little seedlings start from seed and grow up and being able to care for them, it's like it brings a place of joy right now in this sea of everything that we can't do. So I hope, you know, if anyone's got any questions, they're welcome to give our office a call. We've got lots of folks that, you know, can talk through people's specific issues. You know, it's a little early to put out our warm season vegetables like tomatoes, squashes, and melons and peppers, because we still could get some frost coming in. But it's a great time to plant any of the root crops or leafy greens. And, you know, just kind of developing your plan and make sure you can care for it. I mean, I don't think many of us will be traveling this summer, so irrigation shouldn't be a big deal. And weed control, we should have some time to make sure we can handle and pull those weeds away and keep, you know, the competition down from what we're trying to grow.
Now, what is this thing? You see lemon trees being sold around town.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a lemon tree on the coast. I think they're the Meyer lemons. Is this area one that can grow citrus?
Yeah, we can grow. There's some cold hardy citrus varieties, and Meyer's lemons seem to do pretty well. You know, you put them on the south side of the house, so they get the most heat. You do have to protect them on the frosty nights. You know, if you live on a little place where you're going to get frost. But yeah, you can. Definitely possible to pull them off. I'm always amazed that folks do well. I mean, and that also can be said for tomatoes too, you know, where you need some more heat on those. If you put them in a place where they've got good sun and then protect them from the fog towards the end of the year, because they will get some blight. You know, they don't like to be wet at night. That will kind of contribute to the blight issue. But, you know, we never can predict exactly what fogus is going to look like here on the coast. So if it's a dry summer, then tomatoes do great, really, on the coast.
Well, I would suspect once you get beyond the fog layer, you know, Cotton, Blue Lake, Fortuna, it's like, yeah, okay, fine. What are you talking about?
Right. I mean, like you, I grew up with a cabin, and I grow tomatoes and peppers at my cabin, and they're quite remarkable because you can kind of neglect farm them, meaning that the fruit can mature and they can hang on the vine for quite a while and not go bad. I'm like a squash, you know, if you leave it alone, you know, it might be 6 inches one day and then 12 inches the next day, and then you've got, you know, a baseball bat following that, right? But a tomato, you know, it can be ripe for a week or two and still be just fine. So I plant tomatoes and peppers inland and only make 3 rounds of harvest out of them and do real well that way.
Right, as long as you keep the birds off, we're okay.
or the bunnies. I have bunny issues, but I've managed to figure out how to control those.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what about berries? Yeah, we've got blueberries that a lot of folks will grow. We've got, I don't know, 3 or 4 different strains here at the house. And they come in at different times. Raspberries, blackberries, the Himalayas, loganberries. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of different berries that are available. Do most people take advantage or even grasp the variety of berries that we can grow here, even along the coast?
Yeah, we get a lot of interest in berries. They've got a few pest issues, but they do really well here, definitely. We don't grow them commercially as much just because it's a lot of handling. And having that farm labor available for handling, some people aren't ready for that responsibility, but they do really well here, yeah.
Yeah, pick your own seems to work out really nicely.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, if we could just do that with zucchinis, then we would solve the problem.
Right. And we have a zucchini cookbook. Handbook that people call us about every year, looking for alternatives instead of dropping in your neighbor's mailbox, right?
Right, yeah. Use them as landfill, et cetera, et cetera. KIS, News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Jana Valakovic from UC Extension. Jana, we've talked about berries and fruit trees and things of that nature. What if we want to get halfway serious and grow chickens or some of the you mentioned that you have bunny rabbits. Okay, we want to grow rabbits or any of these types of things. Is that another level of commitment that we need to make before we get involved with growing animals rather than plants?
Well, I have chickens. I love chickens. I don't have rabbits anymore. I do have someone with expertise in livestock, but chickens really aren't in our skill base besides just kind of own personal experience. But we do have a lot of resources and some great handbooks from our team statewide, and I've been making those links available to those handbooks on chicken care, for example, and coop design and all of that. Chickens are a relatively low cost investment. I mean, you have to put together a coop that's going to be vermin and varmint proof, you know, so the predators don't eat your young chicks. But after that, I mean, they can bring a lot of delight to a family, and, you know, they bring eggs for a couple of years, and, they can also do some garden cleanup and give you some fertilizer and, you know, generally provide some humor in the day, you know. They are sort of walking dinosaurs. I look at them, right? You know?
Are you a fan of goats also?
you know, I grew up with goats, so I think I'm a little jaded in that way, but people love goats, right? But they management.
When you were saying about, you know, cleaning up and eating and stuff, those things pretty much eat anything in the world. And so if you've got like a blackberry issue, turn a goat loose on the acre and you'll be clear in an amazingly quick time.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, it depends if you live in a quasi-urban area. You have to read, you know, what your codes are and what's allowable. But I mean, there's predator issues for goats that have to be thought about, too.
How easy is it for folks to maneuver, or I guess navigate is probably the proper term to use, the website to find this information as resource, whether it's some of these brochures that you have on hand or some of these others that you're bringing on board or the videos?
You know, it's all pretty easy through our main office website, so UC Cooperative Extension Humboldt, or you're welcome to just call our office at 445-7351, and we've got folks there to help answer your questions and connect you with the resources. In general, like now that I know what it's like, what kind of information goes into the kinds of publications we put together, I mean, Google's my friend, too. And so I, you know, I'll Google looking for information. And if I find it coming from an extension service, then I'll open those, you know, those files, because I know they'll be good more than from kind of a forum, for example, where it's not necessarily, you know, tested in the same science-based ways to make sure the practices, have some basis behind them. But, there's, you know, lots of other extension services all over the country that have great resources, and some of them have wonderful videos. And so there's lots of information in the University of California platform and through our office and across the nation.
Well, good. So basically what you're saying is there's no excuse to be sitting around not doing anything. There's always stuff we can do, and you guys are there to help it out. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for stopping by. Yeah.
You're welcome.
And bringing that bread by, too. Appreciate that. Maybe next time.
With lots of butter.
All right. There you go. And jelly. Thanks, Yana.
Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See everybody tomorrow.